that first year when we changed our sales process, not only was there no pushback from our clients, like zero. I was like, how is this actually working? But we went from less than 5 million under management to over 30 at the end of that year. It was insane.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brad Johnson, and this is the Do Business, Do Life podcast. I believe in the and approach to life and business instead of the either or. This show is my attempt to help financial advisors create unlimited growth and freedom in their life and their business through wide-ranging conversations with some of the most brilliant and interesting people on the planet. We refer to this mission as DBDL, doing business and doing life.
What up, DBDL fam? Kristen here, and today we've got another Triad member interview for you. We're going to be talking with Mike and Jess Panico. They are the husband and wife founders of Arcadia Financial, and Mike and Jess are living proof that you can have success in our industry at a very young age. They're going to tell you exactly how they did it. So after taking the leap to start their practice in their 20s, Mike and Jess have very quickly grown Arcadia Financial in 2023. So that was last year. They brought in $90 million in total assets for the year, and this year, 2024, they're on pace to exceed $100 million in new assets. One of their big secrets, which we're going to talk about in today's conversation, is that Mike and Jess have managed to stand out through really unique and authentic brand messaging, building their practice around the tagline, live like every day is Saturday. And as their brand grew their reputation, Mike and Jess also acquired a tax practice, helping ingrain themselves further into their clients' lives. So if you're looking to create a brand message that really sticks out, you're considering an acquisition, or you're just simply looking for some advice to manage rapid growth, Mike and Jess have you covered. So before we get to the show, we have something special lined up for DBDL listeners. We're going to open up 3 30-minute one-on-one coaching calls with Brad. If you want to grab one of those 3 slots, first, what you're going to do is you're going to text the word coaching to the DBDL Insider phone number. It's in the show notes, but I'll give it to you now. That's 785-800-3235. We're going to automatically shoot you a text back with a link to apply. When you apply for one of those spots, just know this is going to be a great opportunity to tap into Brad's wisdom. And as always, text message and data rates may apply. You can opt out of receiving text messages at any time by replying stop to any message you receive. Show notes that include links to all the resources, books mentioned, and people discussed are available at bradleyjohnson.com/60, which is also going to have the link to apply for the coaching conversation. For now, as always, thank you for listening. Without further delay, today's conversation with Mike and Jess Panico at Arcadia Financial.
Welcome back to another episode of Do Business, Do Life. I have Mike and Jess Panico here with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brad. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, super excited.
Awesome. I am too. We go way back, as they say. I'm trying to remember the first time I officially met you guys. I know you all worked with Sean. Has it been a decade now?
Pretty close to it.
Close to it. Yeah, I think we met Sean in 16 or 17.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. And actually, this is kind of like a full circle moment, because when we met Sean, there were some like local connections that got us in touch with him. But I think, Brad, it was around that time that you were just like starting your podcast. And what was so cool about that period of time was that there was like, you know, access to what other advisors were up to. And your podcast was one of those things, pioneering things. And I remember giving Sean the business about it, being like, hey, like, can I talk to that Brad guy? Or like, how come you're not doing a podcast?
There's a lot of that. Yeah. A lot of competition building there just so Sean could get better. We're like, how do we work with Brad? That's what we're really.
Oh, yeah. Boy. He seems to have like all the good ideas, and he's like really proactive about getting it out there. So, you know, it was one of Sean's many deficits, but, you know, he's got other strengths that make up for it.
Sean is going to love the opening to this show. I can't wait.
But this is like typical Mike, right? Because he's just trying to like get Sean's goat. And Sean's just like, yeah, Brad's awesome. He has so many good ideas. And Mike's like, no, this is not working. You should be like, no, you want to listen to me, not Brad. But Sean was just super nice the whole time.
He was doing some mental jujitsu, just basically taking your momentum and just letting it fly by, right?
Yeah. Or he'll get it under the skin there.
No, you know what's really been fun about this journey, because there's a lot of relationships that we both, Sean and myself, both go way back with. I remember exactly the moment that the two of you really got on my radar, because, you know, we were working at an organization that had lots of advisors at the time. And Mike, you were fairly new to the organization, and you kind of, well, obviously you and Jess were working together. I think you were the one on the stage at the time, and you popped up. There was a little panel discussion, and you'd gone from like, I just remember the number 40 that year for some reason. So I think it might've been 40 million of total assets, and you popped up and you were just like real. And that's what I've always liked about you. our industry tends to have this theme where we put people on stage and they're the hero and everything's, you know, rainbows and butterflies and the world is perfect. And you were always like, well, yeah, we had some good success this year, but here's like what we battled through and here's how we're able to get there. And I just remember an instant rapport just watching you from stage, even before we had really officially met. So you've influenced me as well. Both of you have, and it's been awesome to see you grow your team, your firm, and do some really cool things. I'm excited to get into them today. So on that note, one story I've never actually heard is, how did the two of you get into the world of finance? What was the jumping off point?
So the short version of it is I dragged Jess into it at some point.
I would say one word sums up for me, which is begrudgingly, is how it started. Very different today from where the beginnings were.
I went into financial services right out of college, was working at Ameriprise, didn't end up working out there all that long just because it was very corporate, you know, a lot of pressure to do proprietary product, that sort of thing. I left there and started joining like a semi-independent group. I used to call it the archipelago because there was about seven guys that were operating independently under one roof, sharing overhead, that sort of deal. And there was one gentleman in particular that was like more or less grooming me to be his successor. You know, he was in his early 60s. He needed a game plan for, you know, an exit. And 2 to 3 years into that relationship, it turned out that his daughter took an interest in things and I got kicked to the curb pretty quickly. So I was like kind of really fed up either with both the corporate stuff or, you know, hitching my wagon to somebody else's. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go do this on my own, which was working out of my car and basement effectively at that time. I mean, this was probably like the mid-2000s, late 2000s, doing a lot of work with business owners. A huge pain point at that time was group health insurance. So, you know, normally you knock on doors and you get thrown out immediately. But, you know, I was like, hey, just one quick thing, you know, how's your health insurance? And everybody was really upset about that. So that opened up a lot of doors to do work with business owners, which was, you know, pretty lucrative for a guy just working from home. But then Obamacare became a thing. There seemed to be a crosshairs on commissions related to group health insurance. And I said to Jess, I'm not sure that this is going to work long term. I probably have to pivot. So I didn't know what to do. I mean, I didn't have a relationship with, you know, other coworkers or like a firm that was upstream, something like that. So being somewhat desperate, I started talking to a couple of wholesalers and I was like, I know that you have relationships with guys in town that are really successful. Like, what are they doing to attract new business and to do work with people individually? And their response was like, well, we don't really know. We just support those guys. So why don't you just talk to them? And I was like, why would they talk to me? And this was actually a really interesting breakthrough in that as I started talking to these folks, I discovered that successful people love talking about how successful they are. So I would call these guys and offer to take them out to lunch. And they'd be like, no, kid, I'll take you out to lunch. And in short, what they were all doing effectively was event marketing. So we started talking to some of the FMOs that they were working with, and we started trying to do CE seminars for CPAs or steak dinners, library, educational stuff for retirees and that sort of thing. And at first, they were disasters. I mean, Jess and I at that time were newlyweds, and we were probably spending like all that we had for money.
Do you remember our very first seminar? There were seven people that showed up. We didn't even speak. They had another speaker come out. No one signed up for a consultation, and one woman told us about how she was suing her current financial advisor.
Yes, that was the one person who signed up for a consult, was the person engaged in a lawsuit.
So I guess technically we did get one appointment.
What town was this in? Where was this located at the time?
This is Lowell, Massachusetts. Where we did it. Yeah, UMass Lowell with that seminar.
Yeah. So I think it was just one of those things, like we just have to push through. I mean, it was like maybe the definition of insanity, like the first one or two were not working, but like, what else are we going to do here? And the timing was also interesting in that as the seminars actually did start working out a little bit, we had just had our first child, just had a plan to, you know, raise him for a couple of years, not immediately go back to work. So in short, I was like, hey, honey, you know, while the baby's napping, could you do me a favor here and maybe help me with some of these emails and the phone calls and whatnot? And she's like, okay, just while the baby's napping. I mean, Jess, you could tell your side of it if you'd like, but I think that she quickly discovered that while I maybe was halfway decent at working with people on the financial planning end. Just all the other mechanics of running a practice, I was a complete mess. So she was like, all right, and started pushing me out of the way a little bit, taking over some of the operational stuff. And I'll always remember the first day that she reported to duty in our basement, our little home office. And, you know, she's wearing sweatpants and a hoodie. And I thanked her for honoring the company dress code because that's where we were at that point in our
like
lives.
Baby like stains like all over. And he's like, good. I like this.
That's called Mike, that's called athleisure. It's athleisure. It's cool now. Right. It's okay.
I was just like a trendsetter brand.
And then the rest becomes history. You know, like I think, and you say this sometimes with other people that you talk to, you know, that sometimes success, you know, an overnight success is 10 years in the making. You know, the subsequent 8, 9, 10 years were just us growing and expanding relatively fast. You know, we got out of that basement. We started doing, it was like, you know, leasing office space. And that turned into actually getting our own office. Now we have multiple locations. It went from one employee to now like over 30, pretty close to 40. So what happened over time is, you know, I put all my energy and effort into running all things planning related. And then Jess has taken over literally everything else. I mean, she runs everything from HR to marketing and everything in between from an operational standpoint. So we're truly, you know, a two-headed monster as it relates to this stuff. And I absolutely would not have been able to get out of that basement if it weren't for Jess and her influence.
Jess, any thoughts on your side?
Yeah, you know, just a few. It's funny because we see a lot of people in the office, you know, coming in for interviews, asking us how we got our start. And I say all the time that if we were in our 40s starting this off instead of being in our 20s, we would have never done it. We wouldn't have taken the risk that we did back then. Like, I don't know what we're thinking. You know, we're both like newly married. We have a baby on the way. Mike's like, I'm going to quit the corporate job and drive to people's homes and meet at coffee shops and move into the basement. And then I come from a healthcare background, but I used to travel all the time and do some healthcare finance consulting. And I don't want to travel with like a newborn coming. And Mike's like, so quit your job and move into the basement too and do something that you have no idea how to do. And I was like, okay, this is a great idea. So, you know, here we are, late 20s, newly married, new mortgage, baby on the way, quit both our jobs, like not a lot saved in the bank account. And we're like, well, guess we got to make this work. And it's kind of crazy the risks that we were willing to take back then. And, you know, that transition that's happened. And it's really neat to see along the way that, yeah, it was like Mike and I just in that basement forever. And we both have kind of strong personalities. So when he's like, hey, thanks for being here. Can you do me a favor and send some emails and like make some notes and do some phone calls? And I'm like, you can't tell me what to do. And he's like, you're literally the only other person here helping me. I'm like, okay, fine. True enough. I can't wait to get out of this basement and go back. I was gonna, you know, become a nurse practitioner. So I was all excited about that. And then we really started falling into this luck through these seminars and started really focusing on retirement planning. And what I love about healthcare was, you know, making a difference in individuals' lives. And I didn't know I could do that in this, in finance. And seeing now how many, you know, people that we've touched and how that they're retiring and that they're able to not worry about the money and have that clarity and the confidence, that just like means the world. And, you know, eventually go out of the basement and I realized that I absolutely wouldn't want to be doing anything else. So it's pretty neat. But I think if we weren't so young and dumb and willing to take that risk, we wouldn't be where we are today.
You know, just hearing that, it makes me think of just my entry into finance and just like kind of being naive. You know, it's like, oh, I'll just quit my corporate job and everything will work out. And then it gets hard. It's kind of that like honeymoon phase of starting a business. Sure. So like if you both go back to like that moment in your life, and if you like really said, these are the variables that I went through to make that decision to just like jump and like dive in. And I'm just picturing both of you right now in your basement, like what the hell did we do? You know, like what, like if you had tips for advisors out there that are going through tough times, because it's always fun when you have the idea and then the work sets in, once you make the decision, what advice would you give on that?
I would say it's just a matter of putting in the work. I mean, I think the observation that we had as we talked to some of those other advisors, and then through them, we got hooked up with some FMOs and met even more advisors. I mean, the big observation I had is that these weren't like the most brilliant minds in the community. They didn't have something that we didn't, that like their ability to produce what they were doing or run a business the way that we're running it wasn't based on like some credential, like they weren't doctors. They didn't have like these credentials or higher education that was a barrier. It was just the work and the effort. So, you know, something I would say often, I was like, Jess, if these knuckleheads can do this, we can do it. Absolutely.
I'm a knucklehead too. Why can't I do it?
Right. And in fact, my argument was we should be able to do this better, because oftentimes, and Brad, you know, this is the case. Sometimes you run into advisors that are really successful, but they don't even really know what they're doing. Like they might be really good at sales, but not really good at planning, or they're excellent at planning, but they're afraid to get out in front of people, right? So one thing that Jess and I are not lacking for is confidence, right? So getting out in front of people and doing that end of the work was not a problem for us in the slightest. And then, like, you know, she's mentioning it being a risk, and it certainly it was. I mean, because absolutely, when you're spending a bunch of money and nobody shows up and nobody, like, that was and is the risk. But it is a numbers game, right? You say that oftentimes. So, you know, if somebody's brand new starting off on like the first rung of the ladder, if you've got confidence and you've got a playbook to follow, and that's what was always really great for us too, is that, you know, these other advisors were sharing, like, here's how we run an event. Here's how we run our practice. Here's like some of the solutions that we're using. I mean, the playbook was there. So if you've got the playbook and you're willing to execute on it, you just got to go and put in the work. It does take time, obviously, to get liftoff. But if you put in the work and the perseverance, I mean, it's absolutely there.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's not like, you know, you go to school and you sit down and they're like, okay, here's how to be a financial advisor. Like, this is how you do a proper allocation, because no one even agrees on that, right? And, you know, here are like products to look at, and here's how to do marketing, and here's like how to run a business and do an HR and all these other pieces. No one sat you down and took you through these courses. You just have to, you know, always be the student, right? We're just constantly kicking over rocks and being like, what's going over there? Like, what's, you know, what's under that? Is that like a better way to like build a business, a better way to like serve our clients? I think one thing that's been, you know, really big for Mike too, is that, you know, coming up, going into the corporate world and not really having any mentors, is that he knew the advisors that we would bring on, like he would be a very strong mentor, you know, too. And, you know, we have this one advisor in our office, and he came straight out of school. And Mike's like, I'm going to teach him everything. And I think that he had instant success because we laid down that groundwork and gave him the playbook and taught him, like, this is how you be a successful advisor, but also you're like giving back to your community as well and making a really well-rounded person. And that's something we never had from the beginning.
Yeah, it's like people are cheating today, Brad, because, you know, when we were coming up right out of college, right, and this dates us quite a bit, but, you know, the internet was a thing, but like communities had not yet formed, and, you know, where the good FMOs were as opposed to the bad ones, like it took a while for people to figure that all out. I mean, we didn't figure out, you know, where all those connections were until like 2015, for crying out loud.
There's no Twitter, there's no Reddit.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. One of the things I say to Jess quite a bit is like, I floundered in my 20s for lack of good direction and mentorship. And then by the time I found some good connections and a playbook to follow, you know, I was already in my early to mid 30s. And so for the people that are coming on board now with Arcadia, or advisors that are meeting you through Triad, I mean, they don't have to flounder through their 20s and 30s or for like 5-10 years to figure this out. That like they can find the winning playbook right out the gate. That's such an amazing cheat code to have. So right. I'm a little bit jealous that all those resources weren't available then, but it is what it is. And so, you know, what we've been telling some of our guys, like, you don't have to wait until your mid-30s to have success in this business the way that I had. I mean, you could do it right out of school within a few years if you just buckle down and just follow what works.
Yeah. Well, I was talking with Nick and Ryan on the coaching team to prep for this conversation, and both of them independently were like, you know, I was like, hey, like, if you put Mike and Jess up against all of the community and all of the members we serve, like, what stands out? What's unique that we could share in this conversation? And both of them said, basically, when you guys are coached on an idea, number one, you've said it a number of times already, just a humbleness of, yeah, if you look at the numbers, and we'll get into those a little later, like, you're in the upper echelon of independent financial advisors firms as far as assets gathered on an annual basis. But the ego has not grown with the production and the revenue because you've stayed humble students. You're like, oh, now one of the things that I love about you, Mike, you're going to question everything, right? You're going to say, okay, well, help me understand. Okay. What might not work about that? And you're going to dive in. You're not just going to take every idea and run with it. But they said the speed at which you all take from idea to action and implementation, once you figured out, yes, we are going to test this and run with it, is almost unmatched from many of the other offices we serve and many of the other most successful firms out there. How do you all do that? Is there something internally? Is it you and Jess are getting together saying these are the, you know, the two big initiatives for the year? What, how have you cracked that code over the years?
Well, I think sometimes it's a little bit of a struggle because Mike wants to approach everything at 200 miles an hour. And a lot of it's great and some of it's not. And then I'm over here being a little bit more cautious, being like, wait, let's think about that for a second before we go forward. But he's super passionate about getting things like off the ground and implemented right away. And then after I think we've done our good due diligence, it's just really our team. Back when it was just us, you know, or a small office, you know, we had like 4 or 5 people in our office for years. You have the idea in front of you and you gotta get it done, you know, and that's your focus. And it's like a dog with a bone. You don't let it go until the new initiative is implemented. And now our company is at 35 people. So we got a lot of help and that helps too.
Yeah, I'm highly analytical for sure, but I'm also outrageously impulsive. And between those two things, like usually the impulsivity wins. So, and that's gotten us into a lot of trouble.
Less trouble than if I wasn't here, well, but some trouble.
You know, sometimes advisors, it's said, right, that, you know, they see something bright and shiny and they just want to, you know, latch on to it. Usually what I'm able to spot is like when there really is a great idea or service or, you know, message to embrace. And so sometimes I definitely get it wrong, but I think instinctually, a lot of times, whatever we leap on is directionally what we should be doing. And, you know, whether it's a 50-50 split between the good ideas and the bad ideas, I mean, so much of entrepreneurship is being willing to take risks and also fail. I mean, we're only as strong as we are on the back of all of the mistakes that we've made. I mean, you have to screw up to think, okay, step back and say, what did we do wrong here? How do we avoid it again in the future? Or why did this fail? What would be a better way of going about it? So I'm glad that the analytical part of my brain doesn't often win because, you know, I think that if you are analytical at your base, you're not going to do new things or, yeah, you know, take chances. And I think that's what really, because if you just sit there and say, gosh, I need to analyze this to make sure it's going to work. I mean, yeah, it might work in practice for one person, but it might be different. I mean, that's something we find a lot, especially with marketing, like what works really well out in Kansas just does not work in New Hampshire or Massachusetts. So sometimes, you know, some just analyzing it to the nth degree, you just have to do it and see if it works or not. Mm-hmm. And I think so many people, like if we're talking to other like younger advisors that are listening and they're worried like, hey, I want to analyze this first before I, you know, execute on it, you'll be frozen forever. It's not like, you know, an angel is going to visit you in your dreams and say, yes, this is going to work for you. You have to try it,
right,
and see if it will work. And so I think we've been successful off that impulsivity. Some of it's definitely luck, but we've always been able to put in the work. And anytime we see a good idea, we're like, hey, why can't we do this too?
Right. It's really, you cannot be risk averse and be a business owner. You can't. I mean, you can't make silly decisions and, you know, ruin all your money. But, you know, back when we met you and Sean, you know, in 16, 17, I remember like even our sales process, we were meeting with clients and solving the income need first and talking about like, you know, fixed index annuity and what company and, you know, having a lot of those conversations. And we had like no assets under management. And when we met you guys and learned about this whole philosophy of really presenting a plan and not a product, and we're like, how would that ever work? They don't even know which annuity we're going with. They can't do their research on it. And, you know, we thought about it for a while and we're like, I don't know. It seems like a lot of people are having success. Why don't we try to implement it? That first year when we changed our sales process, and I remember it was mid-year, wasn't until July that we actually made that shift. Not only was there no pushback from our clients, like zero, I was like, how is this actually working? But we went from less than 5 million under management to over 30 at the end of that year. It was insane. And it's something that didn't intuitively make sense to us, but we trusted the people that were saying, why don't you just give it a shot? Like, it really does make sense. And we're like, okay, well, we'll let you know how this goes. And it was a huge success. And I can't ever imagine having a different type of process.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I heard something there that came to mind. It's being an entrepreneur is running a series of experiments in your business, and obviously not dumb ones. Like you said, Jess, that's just going to burn a bunch of cash, but it's like little mini experiments. And you were willing to run that experiment like, it's working for others. Maybe we should try it. And now you're like, oh, we were doing this the hard way the whole time. Now we can just serve people and help them build a plan. And by the way, an annuity might be one of the tools that we help fix the problem, but we don't have to lead with the product. And that's actually a perfect segue, because I know when you first got to Triad, you had fully embraced financial planning at that point. You were obviously managing assets, using annuities for the fixed income portion of a portfolio. Were you guys doing some life insurance as well at that point?
Yeah.
On the tax planning side?
Yep.
Okay. So pretty obviously using a lot of different tools to fix problems. And you had actually already gone down the proprietary process. You'd named a process. Was it trademarked at the time, the first one that you came to us with?
No, we never got that one trademarked.
Okay. So it was the on track and on time process. And you had a nice little railroad track for your logo or something to, or a train on a railroad track.
Yep.
And this is an exact quote from Nick that Mike said. So please correct it if it's wrong, but this won't sound like you at all. So when we first started coaching and we were like, okay, let's talk about your process and like, what are your thoughts? You said it sucked and we hated using it. Is that accurate? Is that the name, not the actual planning process, but it does that.
Should have got that trademarked.
Yeah. It felt a little hokey. I mean, my big hang up at that time, and it's probably still true for a lot of people. So I might, you know, rub some people the wrong way here, but so many financial advisors have, you know, either for their message or logo or both, like a clipper ship or a compass or a lighthouse. And I get it, because like it's a guide, it's a beacon. And so it's like, we need to do something different here. I think our original logo was like an arrow. I mean, that's another big one that's out there, right? Because it's all about direction. Like, and so we wanted to be different. One of our first radio coaches came up with the train theme. And we're like, okay, the train's a little bit different. I get it. We're going to get people on track, get them to their destination on time. Like, so it was fine, but
there's some good imagery like with that, but I don't think it really spoke to us.
Yeah. It never was like something that like settled in our hearts. It was catchy. It worked. It was a little bit different, but it didn't really like speak to, I think at the time we didn't even understand how important it was to like have an authentic message that you really wanted to share with the world. So at that time it was more about it being a tagline than like a real representation of who we are, maybe we didn't even know who we were at that point, because we were just in growth mode and still trying to figure some stuff out. But
we're just shoveling coal into the engine.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Love it.
Every now and then.
Is that considered a mom joke? Because I get hit with dad. That's a dad joke for my kids. Is that a mom joke?
Yeah. Or I don't know. Maybe I can tell dad jokes too. It's 2020.
I love it. So I want to give kind of the before and after for context here, because what you guys have done with your brand, it's one of my favorites ever in this space. And I'm not just saying that, like, I love it. I use it as an example a lot. And so I want to hear your side, but I'll give like a brief overview for the listeners and watchers. So you came in, you were having a ton of success. You'd done the work. And like you said, Mike, it was something. It was kind of an analogy for some of what you did and helped clients do, but it didn't come from the heart. It was kind of just like a tagline, a catchline, and you didn't really like believe it or be it. So we walk through, and obviously Chris Smith is a strategic partner in the Triad community. And we call it kind of, it's the brand manifesto portion of our onboarding process. And you all were one of the very first to go through that at Triad. And thank you for your patience, because it's very different today than it was back then. And it was a little clunky and, you know, it took a little while, but what came out of it was just beautiful. And I don't want to butcher it, so I want you all to say it like you would say it today, but it's all over your website. For those watching or listening, go, we'll put it in the show notes, but arcadia.financial, and go to their website. It doesn't, like, you might not know it's a financial advisor website when you first hit it, because it doesn't feel like it. It feels like something completely different. So what's your version of the framing and the phrasing that you use now?
Yeah, so our mission statement is to challenge you to fearlessly live like every day is Saturday. And I think Chris Smith is such a genius because this is actually a great example of something that Mike was like, oh, our old motto or our theme like sucked and I hated it and it wasn't working. But Nick called us one day and was like, hey, do you know who Chris Smith is? And I was like, that's like the most generic name I've ever heard
now. It's almost as common as Brad Johnson, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, you guys had some bonding over that trauma. So we said no. And he said, hey, listen, he's this, amazing brand coach. You know, why don't you sit down with him and work on your brand? I was like, oh, my brand's like really bad, horrible, but okay. And it's night and day from where it was. Like, I didn't realize that it could be so much better with this power, this concept of Saturday. And what Chris is so brilliant at is that we sat down with him and he was like, just tell me about you guys. Like, you know, what are you guys all about? What's important to you? What are you trying to do in your business? And we literally just like word vomited all over him for like 2 hours. And he was like, wow, what I'm hearing a lot is that you guys are tough love. Like, you want to challenge people, you want to support them, but you're not letting them, you know, take the easy way out. You're not a bunch of yes men. You're not telling them what they want to hear. And you guys really value how precious and important is life and how short it is. And we only have one spin around this thing. And how do we make it that everyone, our clients, prospective clients, our team members at work are living every day like it's Saturday. And what's so neat about Saturday is your ideal Saturday, Brad, and mine and Mike's could all be totally different. But thinking of Saturday, it gives you that feeling, like yeah. That feeling that you're not so concerned, you know, where's my next check coming from? Because you know that Arcadia has it all planned out for you and you really get to focus on whatever it is that you want to be doing. So it was really, really a neat process. And, you know, our train theme was kind of all like, you know, glaze and copper and like a little cold. And now Saturday, I mean, to me, it's like bright colors and balloons and outdoor festivals and cotton candy and live music and beer. And like, it just, it's happy. It's happy for me. And we want to just spread happiness with everyone too.
Yeah. I think the messaging part, we've had several big breakthroughs. I think the very first breakthrough as we covered was embracing fearlessness with marketing. And then a second breakthrough was developing a process to help clients navigate all of their assets as opposed to just being product focused. And what the whole exercise with Chris Smith brought under the microscope was the breakthrough concerning messaging. Like, what are you really doing here? What is the fruits of working through your process or with your firm specifically? Because clients, of course, have other options. So, you know, I get, of course, like a little bit famous for my rants, as Jess already kind of like alluded to. And so I was just riffing that, you know, well, no, I don't want to be known for the guy that just strictly diversifies your stuff or gets you a better rate of return or maybe even helps you save money on your taxes, because those things are helpful, but they're not the end result that just people are looking for. Most people have jobs that they don't like that they want to get out from, or they're stuck in traffic and they don't want to do it anymore. They don't see their kids or grandkids enough. They're not like hitting their bucket list items. And so I've always felt, and I guess we were stymied in expressing that that's what we wanted people to know about us, that made us different, that we were going to spend, in a lot of cases, way more time talking to clients about life than their money. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, you know, the first initial talk with Chris initiated is I remember going into the boardroom and I gathered what, you know, who was on our team at the time around, and I got up on the whiteboard and I put a line right down the middle. And on the left side, I was like, guys, let's talk for a second. What do we do for clients? What is the impact that clients experience in working with us as opposed to other people? And, you know, already there was a lot of energy around that. It was like, you know, we get people sometimes retired well ahead of when they thought was possible, or they're able to do more or spend more than they thought that they could. They feel more relaxed. They know that there's a team in their corner. All this like great, positive, impactful stuff. And then on the right side, I was like, okay, guys, what does it say on our website that we do? And it was like portfolio management, tax planning, like all this dry
diversification
stuff that literally every other financial advisor website says. And I was like, so we do all this wonderful stuff, but we don't tell anybody about it. Mm-hmm. So Chris kind of pushed us to embrace that messaging. And at first, I think we were really, really afraid, because when we saw the first prototype of, you know, the new messaging, especially on the website, I was like, Chris, this looks like a travel agent's website. Like, I think people are going to be confused. Like, when they visit us,
what do you do here?
There's like no mention of like money or like anything. And he was just like, you know, I think it was one of those trust me moments, which we've been on that precipice several times. And so we said, okay, let's take a plunge. And that was an enormous breakthrough, really, because I think people are thirsty for this stuff. The world is so negative. I say to people a lot, you've got this little device in your pocket or on your wrist that reminds you constantly through social media how negative and terrible the world is, and how like all your neighbors and like inner circle friends and family have a different opinion than you. And people are just angry. They're down and out. They're often very bleak in terms of how like they feel about the present and the future. And so, you know, what we're trying to do by our messaging is be like this oasis of positivity and this desert of negativity, where we're like, if you believe that we still live in an amazing country and it's a blessing to be alive, and you've been working hard and saving for a future that you want to enjoy, you want to come talk to this team that's going to like relentlessly push and coach and challenge you to embrace all that and put all that other noise to the background. So that's what that process did for us. And it's like probably the thing that I'm most proud that we've developed as a firm here.
Yeah, it was so neat too, because when we came to Triad, you know, there's part of my mind that's like, when we've gone to different groups before, we knew there was so much more to grow and things that we could do. And so like when, you know, we first met you and Sean, when we were just, you know, not managing assets, we learned how to do that. It opened up a whole world to us. But by the time we joined Triad, I'm like, well, we're kind of already established office here. You know, we're our own RIA and we're doing all this holistic planning. We're doing some insurance stuff and, you know, assets under management and long-term care and Medicare supplement and all the stuff. So I'm like, I don't know. I know there's a lot more growing to do, but I'm not sure how you get there. And then, you know, you guys and all your infinite wisdom and Triad was like, why don't you go through this branding process? I'm like, I don't think this is it, but okay. And boy, was that it. That was another huge pivotal moment for us. Like, talk about like moving the needle, you know? So while I was more focused on, I think, the, you know, structure of the operation, it was really all the messaging and being true to like who we are and putting that out. That was huge growth for our company.
I want to share too, that one of the, like the real powers of having the right message is, you know, we have clients now that will send us photos from vacation or from family events, and they'll throw on like a hashtag Saturday moment. And like, they just get it. They know what that means without really any big explanation. And it's gotten to the point now too, where prospects will come in for their first discovery visit. And one of the first questions that me or any of the other advisors ask is, you know, what brought you in here today? And prospects will say, I'm here because I want to live every day like it's Saturday. They already know like that. And like, they just, it just clicks. They know what it means. They know that they're not there. There's something in their way, and they feel like we're going to, you know, help be the gatekeepers to get them through to the other side. So to see the messaging, you know, manifest in that way, it's awe inspiring. It's really incredible.
That is so cool. Did you guys create the hashtag Saturday moment, or did your clients just come up with it? How did it come to be?
Yeah, we were talking a lot about Saturdays in the office, but, you know, and we've had some Saturday stuff, but a lot of it's our clients. You know, people just come up to us all the time and feed it back to us, or will, you know, be saying, we had this one advisor on a call. It was like a late Friday afternoon, and he's helping somebody, and this transfer like got held up, and, you know, he's trying to call like all these companies before they, you know, close business for the weekend. And, you know, it's at that point that we just came out with this new branding and language and everything, that client said to our advisor, hey man, you know, I know it's Friday afternoon, but it sure feels like Saturday. And it was so cool to see that start to happen. And it happens all the time. Clients, prospective clients, like people we run into are like, oh yeah, you're the Saturday people. Like they get so excited about it. So it's really neat to see how, you know, it wasn't something that we put out there, but they have like brought back to us sharing their Saturday moments. It's neat.
Yeah. So I want to go, the team pulled this off the website. I didn't even know you guys had done this. So I believe this is under your bio section, so tell me if it's not, but it basically says my ideal Saturday. And there's one for Mike, there's one for Jess. I'll paraphrase a couple things, but Mike basically said, I have a big work hard, play hard personality. My ideal Saturday, good night's sleep. Then I'm out, basically a steamy cup of black coffee, time to do some work, preferably physical. I'm out in the yard, getting a sweat. Then afternoon, grab some time with the kids, hike outside, bike. Now it's time to eat again. So Mike's got a lot of eating in his Saturdays. I love that. That's, we connect on that. Time to fire up the grill, get the tunes going, relax outside, maybe a board game, have a beer, have some friends over. The best things in life are free, right? So now I'm going to hit Jess's. My ideal Saturday starts with waking up before anyone else or anyone else notices. Feel that one with kids, right? To grab a cup of coffee, go outside, no matter the season. If it's summer, before the heat of the day. If it's winter, no more beautiful time of day being outside, listening to stillness before the world starts to wake up. After I get ready for the day, I'll be heading back outdoors. Blessed to live in New England where we get experience four distinct seasons. So my ideal Saturday could fall in any of them. I love them all. Hiking, beach, hanging at an outdoor concert, snowshoeing. Alongside of me, close friends and family to cap it all off, having some good food and beverages are a must. Tacos and margaritas, lobster, bacon, wine, pizza and beer, a five gourmet restaurant. It doesn't matter as long as I'm with people I love. So we've talked a lot externally, how that hits clients, but now you bring it back internally. And that's one of the things I've seen with Triad as well. Do business, do life. We want it for you all, but we also want it for us. It's a selfish pursuit, right? And then you can live it. And as Chris Smith says, like, not just say it, but be it. Mm-hmm. So how has that now translated internally to your team? The idea of like living every day like it's a Saturday, how has that played into your culture, how you attract talent, how you show up? Just give me some of that insight, because it has to have impacted your team as well.
I think it's really cool because, you know, people, our teammates, people we interviewed, like, you guys are just so authentic. And I'm like, I don't know how people can't be authentic. I don't know how to be anybody else, you know? And I think because we express ourselves like that, people feel free to, you know, let their hair down and be their true selves as well. And we have people working at Arcadia in their 20s and in their 70s and everywhere in between. And everyone truly just, you know, gets along with one another because they're just being the real, like, true person. And our culture, we have a culture club at work and they're amazing. They're always planning like awesome, fun things for our team to do internally, externally. We just went bowling with everybody. You know, we do trivia things. We do lots of stuff around food. And I think it's really cool because we get to know who everybody is on a personal level. I mean, they say you see your colleagues more than you do your family sometimes, you know, because you're sleeping, commuting and all that stuff too. So they should feel free to, you know, be who they are and know that that's what we're doing for our clients too. We're supporting them so they can live, you know, what their ideal life is. And it's just really neat to be in this environment, especially coming from like corporate backgrounds where everything had to be a certain way, to just be, you know, your authentic self. It's cool.
It can be a struggle at times. I mean, we've been rapidly growing and we've asked a lot of our team over the last couple of years, especially those that were with us through COVID and then thereafter. I mean, we were suppressed on hiring needs through COVID. So I think the year after we hired like 10 or 15 people, it was stupid. And so we've often joked with our team, like, we know that you're going through Monday mornings and Wednesday afternoons, but the objective is like, we know that you come to work to support what's important to you on Saturday. And like, I hope that you know that Jess and I are here to relentlessly support you in that pursuit. The other thing too, is I hope that you feel like your work is meaningful, that you're not just punching a clock, that you are having impact on the people that we're helping. And we this is still a struggle. We're trying to work so consistently hit this because this messaging is still kind of in its infant state. I mean, we've been doing it for 2 or 3 years. And so I'd be lying if I was saying that we were iron, you know, clad with this, but we try to have our clients make a Saturday declaration. So what you just read off of our website, that's like our ideal Saturday. When you come in for a first appointment, we ask our clients, like, do that same description for us. Like, pick a given Saturday. There's a clean calendar, no obligations. You can be doing anything with anybody, anywhere. You know, what's emblematic of an ideal day? And we'll get clients describing all sorts of stuff because there's people who are gardeners or they're travelers or they just want to mess around with grandkids, whatever. But then once they say that, we're trying to make it like emblematic. We encode it like that declaration gets thrown into their binder. We're going to try to start putting it on things like for when they retire, like a cutting board that will hang around the kitchen. So it's a constant reminder of what they've declared. When folks come in for their annual review, we'll like read that declaration back to them. Are you living this? Is something standing in your way? Like, can we like expand on it? And make that the focus of not only what clients are watching to measure how successful their plan is, but also for our team internally to measure the impact that they're having, to feel good about what it is that they do. And like I said, it does tie back to us trying to make sure that they're living, you know, their best lives as well. So all the way around.
I love that. Where in the process do they declare that? Is that after they come in for the first discovery session, that's homework before they come back for their second? Or where do you insert that into the process?
It's getting asked the very first time we sit down with them. And boy, has that changed the conversation, you know, what that looks like. You know, we ask them, you know, what brings them in today? You know, what are they trying to accomplish? And then we just tell them, you know, it's just a math problem. We just need to figure out what you have now, what you need then, and backwards out the math. But we're not here trying to get the next hot stock tip or get you the biggest rate of return. What we're trying to do is consistently deliver on what you need to live every single day, like it's Saturday. So we can't tell you that without knowing what is your ideal Saturday. What is it that you want to do? Because if you, you know, have dreams of touring the world and traveling constantly, well, that's going to have a different type of financial impact than if you're like, all I want to do is hang on my backyard with my cat and spend time with my grandkids. And both of those are beautiful things. But if we know from the get-go, what is it that you're trying to achieve, then we can put a plan around helping you get there.
Yeah, it's powerful to introduce out the jump, because especially a lot of our prospective clients, right, at minimum, half of them already have an advisor, or maybe they're shopping for the first time and we're one of the first stops that they're making, you know, to consider who they're going to work with for their retirement. And I know that it's actually like, so I think some advisors would prefer, like if you're going to meet a prospect that they've never had an advisor before, or they don't have an advisor presently, I almost prefer it now, because once they've had one conversation with us, it should stand out. This is unlike any other conversation I've had with somebody who just talks to me about mutual funds and rate of return. And, you know, that stuff is important. I'm not saying that you can't, you have to obviously put in the planning work on the back end, but what's the point of any of it if you don't understand what it ties to? And there's not this like intimate understanding of what these people are trying to accomplish. I mean, that's where we're starting. Like, where do you want to ideally be? And then let's like backwards the rest of it out.
Well, what comes to mind there is you've simplified the complex. I mean, you think about most retirees, to your point, they've either been super confused because they've had all kinds of financial acronyms and products thrown at their way in the last 20 or 30 years, or they've just never even started. They procrastinated and they're like, oh, we're way behind. And it's Covey's 7 Habits. Start with the end in mind. Here's what do you want on this side of the equals sign? It's just simply backing into the math to get there. You know, and that's like that. Do you see shoulders like, oh, like really? It's that easy. I just need to like talk about what I want to live in retirement, and you guys can just help me get there and you'll do the work. Like, do you see the weight lifted off their shoulders when you're having these sort of conversations?
Sure, we sure do. And you know, it's funny too, is in our neck of the woods, we got a lot of very analytical engineers here. So, you know, the husband and wife come in and, you know, there's maybe some preconceived notions of like, I've got it spreadsheeted out. I've thought of everything in retirement. And we're like, but what do you want in retirement? And you know, first they're like, who cares? I know I have the money to retire. And it's like, okay, but you know, we'll look maybe sometimes, you know, to the wife and be like, how do you feel about the retirement plan? And oftentimes, you know, having a very type A driven analytical spouse will be like, I don't understand what's going on. And I don't know what happens if he has another heart attack again and he leaves me, what I'm going to do. And I don't know who to trust. And it's crazy that, you know, these questions bring that out in couples, and we can really like discover like what's going on and get everyone on like the same page too.
What it makes me think about, Brad, is that, you know, I know that you've featured Pat Quinn, you know, the speaking coach, several times, and he'll often talk about how advisors, especially in seminar settings, will, you know, use all sorts of buzzwords, risk mitigation, tax strategies and conversions, you know, laddering, dollar cost averaging. And one of his points is that nobody knows what that means half the time. It's not the language that normal people use. It's the language of the industry. Yeah. So oftentimes when like that's the value that you're putting forward, especially in an initial conversation, you're talking over a lot of people's heads. You're confusing them. They're just not feeling any warm fuzzies. I mean, when people make a decision to hire somebody that's going to have like an impact and have a like a potential lifelong relationship, I don't think people are making that decision based on brochures or fact patterns or like Morningstar reports. They're making a gut-oriented decision based on trust. Do I like this person? Do I feel like they've heard me, that they're listening to me, that they're going to be the person to guide me? And you've got to talk at that, at their level. And their level is, well, they understand where they're at. And oftentimes they don't like where they're at. They want to be somewhere else. And if you're talking that language, can we get you from A to B? Can we get you out of what's like inhibiting you from having a fantastic life over towards what's a more ideal day for you? People will say yes to that, as opposed if you're asking them to like, hey, you, do you want a more diverse allocation with these types of funds versus those? That's not how normal people, like regular people that we're serving, think and act. So just by changing that conversation to something that's just a little bit more close to home makes it easier for people, I think, to make a decision to work with us.
I heard Pat share an exercise that's like super simple. It's like, pretend like you're calling your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, and talking about money or retirement. Mm-hmm. And as a financial advisor, that's the language you should use. And to your point, Mike, it's none of those words you just spewed out. You know, it's like, I've really been considering risk mitigation, you know, this evening about my, you know, it's 1,000,000%. Okay. So I'm watching the clock. It's ticking down. We've got like so much I haven't got to. So, okay. I want to go to back to you guys. I just love the realness. And this was a couple years ago, Mike. And I remember we had a pretty deep heart to heart, and it wasn't like a warm and fuzzy conversation. It was a real conversation. I appreciate that. I appreciate, like, my best friends in life, my best relationships in life, you can get real with, you know, and sometimes it's like not super fun conversations, but sometimes they're needed conversations. And this was right when you guys had just acquired a tax practice. So as we look out at how you all build holistic plans, income planning, investments, tax planning, healthcare, legacy state, kind of the CFP standard, how you would build a financial plan. And you guys saw an opportunity. Hey, what if we brought this tax into Arcadia? And I know they're separate businesses, but basically just made it as easy as walking across the hallway so we could serve our clients at a higher level when it comes to taxes. And I think it was a lot tougher than you thought it would be. And we were kind of having one of these conversations where we're like, this kind of has sucked out of the gates. It's a lot more work than we thought. And can we talk about that? Because I know it's kind of back to the beginning of the conversation where it's like, oh, Jess, come help me. And then it's like, oh, the real work sets in. What'd you learn through that process? I know things have really, that decision has benefited your practice now, but it wasn't so easy in the early days. So like, just work through that. If you were giving a financial advisor friend advice on like the do's and don'ts of that whole process.
Well, I think that journey started with just kind of an observation that when you're helping somebody navigate retirement, they have to solve a lot of different disparate problems. So they have, you know, portfolio concerns and tax concerns, but then it turns into healthcare, legal issues, tax issues, certainly. And by our licensure, maybe our experience, what we can do as advisors, you might only be able to tackle a 20th of that, or maybe even as much as half of it, but there's still a deficit that required coordination with other like-minded professionals, usually either accountants or attorneys. The problem with that is that whether or not you can maintain a relationship with those folks depends on a host of different things. How good are they at communicating? How much do they believe in cross-pollinating plan work? And keep in mind that, you know, even if you're working well with a couple of those professionals, if you're servicing hundreds of clients, it's not just that they're all going to be using the same persons. They might have like, you know, 20 different accountants, 30 different local estate planning attorneys. And so it just made it really, really challenging to use the word comprehensive with a straight face, because we were doing some of the work and referring out the rest. But gosh, we would notice mistakes left and right, even with the best of intentions. You know, the attorney would do their trust work, but then there was no communication. So people's beneficiary designations hadn't been updated. And I could give you other examples, but you probably get it, that it just wasn't a cohesive plan. So
our clients calling us saying, my accountant yelled at me because I have all those taxes. And we're like, remember? Yeah, we did that conversion. That was part of the plan. And they're like, I don't remember, but my accountant says you're an idiot.
Oh, God. Yeah, that still happens. And it drives us crazy. So we said, to heck with this, like, and I'm like hyper simplifying, like, how we like actually got this started, but we'll just bring this in house. And so on the tax side, we did that by acquisition. One of our clients just so happened to be a retiring accounting professional. And so we worked something out where we acquired his practice. And then a year later, we acquired a separate practice that the attraction there is that it had some staff, and we had a staff up to replace those people that we purchased, and they were going to retire and that sort of thing. And I think the issue is that, you know, while they are similar services, they are very much different operationally. So that was a problem out the gate. And then the other issue is that these two firms that we purchased were being run by their respective entrepreneurs who were selling their practices. And we kind of assumed that we'll either be able to hire a new leader for this particular division or department, or one of the accountants that we have on staff will like rise from the ranks and run this division for us. And neither one of those two things happened. And I think accounting is a very specific type of industry where either you just really enjoy doing accounting, or you kind of do have an entrepreneurial mindset, and you know, you're probably running your own practice. And so, you know, hiring somebody to lead that was just, it's been 3 years. We struggle to even find one person to interview that wants to like manage a tax bracket. Because guess what? If they want to do that, they're probably already running their own practice.
Right.
And then for the you know, the accountants, and we have some really talented ones working for us, you know, their comfort level sometimes is just drawing the shades and hunkering down, hibernating for 4 months and banging out 500 different returns. And so some of the struggles we've had in assimilating that as a service have included running it operationally, because that's something that, you know, I myself have had to effectively bear the brunt of. Like, we had our entire financial planning team really immersed in the language of Saturday and the holistic mindset, and accountants are very left-brained. And so as much as we've been like, hey, we're going to do this stuff for people too, they'll be like, yeah, Saturday this, Saturday that. But at the end of the day, it's all about maximizing the refund. And I was like, no, that's not at the end of the day. I mean, that's important. And so getting the cultural assimilation has been a challenge too. And so no knock to those guys, because they truly do. I mean, like, our team is like, what, just like a week and a half out from deadline. They are working super hard. So they're some of the most talented, dedicated people I know. But I would say on the whole, building up the financial planning side for us has been a lot easier than building and assimilating the tax service.
Well, you're also financial, you're CFP, you know, so you're like, I know how to do this, but it's like, okay, how about all this tax stuff? And you're like, starting to get a little out of my comfort zone. I really kind of relate it to, so in my family, I just have one sister and she's 10 years younger than me. And it kind of makes me feel like that, you know, there's a huge age gap. And it's like, hey, I started this financial planning practice and now, oh my gosh, it's 10 and it's doing wonderful and really developed. And then all of a sudden you have another baby and you're like, oh my gosh, I got to start from scratch again here. Like, what did I do? How does potty training work? And you know, you're starting like from the very beginning. Yeah, I have done it before, so I'm not a total novice, but it's new and it has to go through its like little ugly baby phase until it gets there. So
I think my advice for anybody who wanted to introduce a service like that to their practice is, you know, have somebody that can manage or spearhead that effort from the jump, as opposed to assuming that you can find them thereafter, because then you might find yourselves in our position. We've made it work. It's just like duct tape and prayer a little bit, like holding it all together at times. But I will say, you know, some of the dividends that it pays is, in addition to people coming to see us, if I say, why are you here? If they're not saying, hey, because I want to live every day like a Saturday, the second most common thing I probably hear from prospective clients is, well, you guys are a one-stop shop. We actually describe for people that if you engage all of our services, imagine you're coming in for your annual review and you've got your advisor, your accountant, and your attorney all in the same room all at the same time. This is not a service that you generally get from most financial planning firms. Usually that's three separate visits. Sometimes it's four or five separate visits with disparate professionals who do not coordinate on your behalf. They rarely even talk about you. You know, they're maybe even making mistakes on their respective side of the fence for lack of that cohesion. So sometimes this doesn't matter until it really matters. Like when there's a death in the family or you get laid off, like all of a sudden having cohesive service matters tremendously. And I think people recognize that. So it's another huge draw for us. We're still figuring it out, but you know, we said earlier, Brad, we're not afraid of taking risks and taking a couple blows to the face. We've taken those blows, but we're learning from them. And that tax practice is going to be, it's going to be totally transformed probably within the next 12 months because we've been able to bring in some new talent. We are getting organized. It's just taking some time.
Yeah. Well, the other benefit, I mean, typically to have those three professionals in the same room, you got to be working with the family office and have $10 million. So you're democratizing family office level planning, which is huge. And I heard it once said, if you can build a business that allows people to be lazier, you're on a pretty good track. I mean, look at Amazon, so I think that is very smart long-term in worth the pain. And at the end of the day, you're building better financial plans today because of it. You're serving your clients at a higher level. So, I mean,
I feel like we have to start thinking about resilience because, you know, we are in an environment where potentially it might not even be years. It could be months where people have an artificial intelligence where they say, you know, I'm 66 years old and I have this much in the bank and, you know, I want to spend this and I think I'm going to live to 100. What do I do with my money? That's definitely coming. ChatGPT will just tell you what to do. I feel like, and it could be a generational thing, but at least the people that we're currently targeting, I don't know if they're going to trust the robots. Right. So I think that gives us a little bit of resilience. But then as some of the younger people start approaching retirement themselves, I think there's going to be more temptation to use apps and AI and other things. And what we're trying to do is build Arcadia to be so over the top, intensely relationship driven, because that, you know, I mentioned before how, you know, with social media and similar, everything is so negative out there. The other, I think, consequence of all this online stuff is that people do feel alienated from relationships and communities. And sometimes too, that is just an enormous draw to be able to sit down in front of a person, shake hands, look each other in the eye, and not just have like one professional be able to do that for you, but now several. So, you know, to what extent will that make us resilient in the brave new world, Brett? I have no idea, but at least it will give us a lot more defense against that. And I actually could believe it makes us more attractive than ever because, you know, when you're really going through it, that ChatGPT is not going to reach out and hug you and spend time with you and really get to understand. It is an algorithm.
It's not asking about your ideal Saturday, right? And making sure that they're holding you accountable to that. So,
yeah. So,
well, the other thing too, from a just straight, as Warren Buffett calls it, building the moat around your castle. I completely agree, Mike. I've thought about this a lot. You know, I plan to be in finance for hopefully at least a couple more decades, which means you need to start thinking right now, how is technology and AI going to impact this business over the coming years? And if it is what generates me the highest return on my portfolio, guess what? An algorithm is going to be able to crank that out much more efficiently than a human is in the next handful of years. But now if it is all of the complexities of a financial plan, interacting with proactive tax planning, interacting with estate planning that's going to leave a legacy behind to those that you care about. Those are a lot more complex problems with a lot more moving parts and rules and regulations. And depending on, you know, your state you live in. And now because you're solving more complex problems, that moat around your castle is bigger. And also, you know, you think about it from a revenue standpoint, you're going to be climbing the ladder on the higher net worth that have those problems. You know, if I don't have money, I don't have tax problems. I figured that out when I left my job and didn't have a paycheck for 2 years. I'm like, oh, this is easy. This solved my tax problem. I just don't make money. That's nice. Easy. But I just love that as far as just building that moat around Arcadia. Like, you're solving more complex problems now, which means it's going to be harder for AI to take that over. So you have any thoughts there, Mike? I know you geek out on this stuff a lot, but
AI is just a more convenient way of divining the playbook. I mean, I do think most of what we do in the background can be boiled down to an algorithm. Any advisor listening knows if I threw a pair of 65-year-olds at you with $1 million, you probably know already what you would do for that person in terms of services and like financial strategy. So there's nothing preventing anybody from, right now you probably have written down somewhere what your philosophy or planning strategies generally are. So you can code that and make an AI just spit it back for you and do the math. By the way, that's just a more convenient way of, like, instead going to the library and reading a bunch of books on these same subjects. I mean, what we do is not a secret alchemy that only advisors have access to. It's just, it's becoming easier for, you know, consumers to access it themselves. Having said that, I don't really see that as an enormous threat, because generally speaking, it's not like the lack of knowledge that hurts people in executing a financial plan. It's they themselves and their, you know, emotions.
So, psychology, yeah.
Right. Yeah. People want to buy more when the market's up and they want to panic sell when the market's down. They get greedy. They get fearful. And it's those things, no matter how much reading that you do, whatever ChatGPT tells you to do, it is your ability to stick to a plan, especially, you know, in these environmental extremes, that really often makes a difference between your plan working and not. So like the problem isn't like the lack of access to a particular mutual fund or insurance product. Generally, the problem is you, the consumer, to stick to a plan. And so that's the thing. I don't think that the AI is going to be like reaching out and slapping you off the back of the head when, you know, you're tempted to do the wrong things with your money at the wrong times. Like, it's never going to be able to do that. But a human that you trust, that you have a relationship with, who has promised to challenge you, right, is going to be able to do that.
Right. It's not that you don't know the formula. What's the formula I got to plug in to get the answer? You know, it's the coach. Like, who do you have that's challenging you to live that life that you say that you want to? You know, it's all this like lack of human connection, the more digital we get. And, you know, the mental health crisis that's happening in our world today. How many times have we sit down with people and we've said, you know, you keep talking about that your ideal day is to move, you know, why don't you do that now? That's what you want. That's what's going to make you happy. Move closer to those kids and grandkids. Well, I don't know if I can afford it. Okay, well, we've done the math. You can. Your plan supports it. Don't be so fearful. Don't have that lack of clarity in your plan. We're here as humans telling you, like, we got our eye on this. Now we're going to challenge you to go and do that. And they do it. And they're so happy, but they would have been so paralyzed before. And sure, the AI can tell you, like, yeah, you have money to do it, but they're not like giving you that confidence that humans
can. That, you know, that's so right, Jess, because like what I just said is like, hey, like a good coach or advisor is going to prevent you from making mistakes. But another unspoken value is our average client, Brad, is what we call the millionaire next door. Because, you know, most people we work with, they've got a house that's worth a lot of money. Their mortgage is usually paid off. They get some money stocked away in their 401k and similar. And they're easily worth a million or more. And it's said that on average, if you retire with a million, you die with 2 to 3 times that same amount. Most people get richer as they age. And well, that's for a couple reasons, right? Like compounding interest is a pretty miraculous thing. That and people live with a lot of fear. You know, yeah. What if the election goes wrong? What if I end up in a nursing home? What if taxes go up? So for a lot of people
right now,
they're afraid to spend their own money. And so something that a great coaching relationship, like we do this a lot with clients, we're like, you're not spending enough. They don't expect to get that kind of advice from an advisor. You know, you're expecting for them to say, save more. You know, there's dark clouds on the horizon. By the way, the less you spend, the more I get to manage and bill you on, right? Like, that's what they're expecting. But we're like, guys, like, I remember specifically doing this with a lot of clients coming out of COVID. I was like, it's time to do some makeup spending. You've been trapped indoors for like 36 months. I know you skipped the vacations and weren't going out to eat. Like, we've got to do the word we were using, and people still say it to me. I was like, we've got to do some reckless spending this year.
Yeah. Challenging them to like, not too much, but like this amount, I want you to go out and spend it on something that you wouldn't even consider because you can. And you owe it to yourself, and you're going to feel a lot better after.
Yeah, those such fun conversations. People would write me back. All right, Mike, I was reckless this weekend. I bought this or that or whatever. We booked this trip. And it's just like, that's the impact we're gunning for, man. AI will never be able to do that.
So true. I love that. Okay, there's two more places I want to go. And if you guys have to run out the door, like wink twice and we'll end it quick. So one of the things that, and we never probably laid this out, but I'm just going to hit it here just for context, because we've talked not really at all about revenue and money. And it's been the best conversation because it's actually why you all exist. It's to serve retirees and help them live their best lives and do the math to make that happen. But you have experienced some pretty insane growth. And this isn't going all the way back to when I first met you guys, but 2021, approximately $65 million of total assets gathered that year. 2022, you bought the first tax practice, had a lot of additional side energy getting poured into that, still grew a little, around $70 million. 2023, last year, as we record this, bought your second tax practice, brought in around $90 million of total assets. And then this year, year to date, so we record this April 5th of 2024, $36 million year to date of assets brought on. I mean, we do the math. That's trending for well over $100 million. Jess, I want to go to you on this one. One of the things you said before we hit record, you've been sitting in the COO role, the ops role, the really team-focused role. Mm-hmm. And you'd mentioned a lot of your focus now is on growing leaders on the team. And what was the total team members now that you're up to?
35.
Those numbers that we just laid out, there is no possible way Mike and Jess Panico in the basement in the hoodie with the little right. spit up on your shoulder. There's absolutely no way you could have done that with the two of you. So what have you learned as it's become not a I and we game, but a team game, like a we, the two of you, but a we collective now with all of the team members? What have you learned along the way, and how has your focus shifted now as you're running a much bigger team and business?
It's been really amazing. You know, Nick Whitaker, one of the coaches at Triad, he came to visit us a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, there's two things that really will grow your business. One being leads, who you bring in and how much revenue you do. And two is the team. And you cannot experience significant growth without having a solid team behind you. And he was so true. And at the time, it was just Mike and I. Kind of, if you looked at our org chart, it was like me and Mike and everybody else. And
as far as leaders, like established leaders on the team.
Yeah. It was just Mike and I were the only leaders at the time. And everyone else was kind of just like floating under us. So we said, you know, I think we really need to develop a leadership team around here. And we already knew we had a couple key individuals in the organization that were just, you know, 10 out of 10, you know, excellent at their job, excellent at just being team players and helping other people out. They were individuals that people went to, you know, seek guidance and direction often. So while they technically weren't in a team lead type of position, they were just natural resources for our team there. So when we did some restructuring with our org chart and actually moved some individuals up to, you know, get a director of planning operations, a director of client service, a director of marketing, that helped us tremendously with the day-to-day, you know, pressure of not only running a business, but checking in with 35 individual people to make sure, is everybody happy? Is anybody having a bad day? I don't even know if there's something going on in your life because the team's getting so large and I might be in a meeting all day and I'm not even aware of this. So I think that has been something else that has tremendously helped us move, you know, our growth needle there by having these trusted individuals. And some of them have come to us after we started building this new structure, but it's been amazing. It's taken a lot of the pressure off of our shoulders, knowing that our entire team, regardless of your position here at the company, is getting cared for. And our leaders are now making business decisions, you know, with us. Yes, we own the firm, but they're coming around the table and they're, you know, as passionate and invested in the success of Arcadia as we are. And they're bringing a different perspective, things that we don't see necessarily every day. That some, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know if that's a good idea. And then we implement it. And it's like, oh, that was a great idea. You speak for the people. Yeah. So it's been huge. It really has.
Awesome. I know we're close to time here, and I know you guys have some things to get to today, like shovel some snow, right?
Oh gosh, like 2 feet of it up there in April. This is unheard of, Brad.
Well, welcome to the Northeast, right?
That's right.
Hey, it's beautiful in Kansas. If you guys want to move south, you know, to more of a winter, you can be snowbirds.
Snowbirds in
Kansas. Oh yeah, it's beautiful. So I want to share just one last thought. You guys, first off, one of the reasons I love you is as just humans, like throw all this financial advisor stuff out the window and what we do day to day for a living. But you've just always been just real people that have fun. Like you don't take yourselves too seriously. You're a good time to, you know, whether it was a casino in the Bahamas where we were throwing craps one time, like you just like to have a good time. And one of my proudest moments at Triad, I relate so much to what you were sharing, Mike, and Jess, just about the early days in the basement and then the next inflection where it was, you know, take on this tax practice and you were in over your head and you know, as an entrepreneur, there's just these curveballs out on the horizon that you just don't see coming. And then it's like, well, I guess we got to figure out how to get through this one. And Triad's had our fair share of those. But in Austin, so this was our launch experience. So this was the beginning of 2023. You guys had shared what we call at Triad, a champagne moment the year before. And so that's kind of our version of live every day like a Saturday. Like, what are you shooting for a year out? What are we going to pop a bottle and celebrate? And I pulled up the exact words that you wrote down January 14th, 2022. It said, and here's what's cool. At that time, we just defined a champagne moment as what do you want to celebrate a year from now? We hadn't incorporated. Now we do it like, what's your do business champagne moment? What's your do life champagne moment? At that time, we're just like, what's your champagne moment? And you all wrote this down. I'm guessing it was Jess because it's pretty neat handwriting. Take the summer off to spend time with our boys, Mike and Jess Panico, January 14th, 2022. Well, fast forward a year, you had that summer, I believe it was 6 weeks. You'd taken 6 weeks. Was that in Cape Cod? That's normally where you guys go, right?
Yep.
6 weeks in Cape Cod. Now, I won't say like completely unplugged, but like 95% unplugged.
Sure.
And you had not only grown your practice that year, but you had grown your freedom. And back to living every day like a Saturday, like you spent a summer with your two young boys and created some memories, I'm sure, like, you know, you cherish to this day. And guess what? Those are fleeting because I've got a 13-year-old now and it goes in the blink of an eye. And I remember recognizing that in our community. And that like was one of my proudest moments because I was like, man, you guys just didn't like say it. You did it. You did the work. And that's like stuff that's meaningful because now you've created a business that's blessing more team members, blessing more clients, but it's blessing you more. And that's what this business is all about. And so just share some of your thoughts there as you've seen the evolution of your business. And what was cool is your one the year after is make more meaningful memories with our boys this summer. So I definitely see a theme and I think you're expanding to 10 weeks this summer.
That's
so
right.
Give me the do life side. Like what's important about that to y'all? I guess we can just make this your definition of DBDL because we're going right into it. But what are your thoughts there?
First of all, that wasn't an easy goal. And I want to throw that out there because sometimes, you know, January, if I'm like, oh, I already know I'm going down for the summer, I'll just write that. But that wasn't the case. We've never done that before. We dreamed big. And I think that's, you know, something great that you all push us to do at Triad. You know, it's like, ideally, close your eyes. What would you want to be doing? We're like, we have no idea how this can happen. But we'll worry about the how later. Right now, we're just saying what our dream is going to be. And I think you were reading about like how few like weekends or summers you have with your kids right until they turn 18. So that really inspired us to make that goal.
Well, so first of all, it was born of a certain necessity. I mean, during COVID, so our two boys are on the autism spectrum. And so a lot of services related to special needs were sorely lacking during that period of time, and it even extended into the summer periods. I mean, they were supposed to, with their needs, like have summer program for both school and just, you know, occupational therapy and similar, and there just were no services. So we knew going into one of those summers that we would have to mine them. There was no solution for it. So,
find a solution. And I don't know how we're going to do either because there were no options there. And we certainly couldn't step away from the business or so we thought.
The goal wasn't at first like, hey, let's just go enjoy ourselves at Cape Cod. It's like, well, we've got to like figure out a way to balance our schedules to take care of our kids for the summer. And we did have this option to be able to maybe do that down the Cape as opposed to New Hampshire. So we said, well, maybe we could like turn a negative into a positive. Like, can we work remotely? And just like, so like when we shut off the computer, like be able to just like jump on the hiking trail or go to the beach within a matter of minutes. And it was around that same time, as Jess had mentioned, I had read something. I think it was somebody you had come speak at an event, Brad. So I'm sorry, I can't like.
Was it Jim and Jamie Shields, 18 yes. Summers?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. Something effectively like if you do the math on your kids. So if your kid's 12, that puts them 6 years away from 18 where they're going to, you know, hopefully leave you. Right. Because that's what you want for your kids. And for, you know, there's really 8 good summer weekends if you live in New England because it gets cold pretty fast. Right. So do the math. You have 48 weekends left with your kids before they grow up and move out. You know, how are you going to spend that time? And so one of the things we reflected on is, and this is, I said earlier, you know, sometimes people see the overnight success and not the 10 years that led to it. You know, there were a lot of 60, 70, 80 hour work weeks in those basements. I've done hundreds of seminars where I don't get home until 8 or 9 o'clock. I've missed a lot of bedtimes. I've missed a lot of like family dinners. And I started thinking, man, like, is this what it's all about? Work, 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 revenue, revenue. You know, is that what success is? And we decided like if we were going to work remotely or like more so enjoy our summers, if that came at the expense of not producing as much or making as much, then like, so be it. That was a trade-off that we wanted to make because we decided that our family was way more important than the success that we were having as a business. And by the way, we don't really feel like we had to like absolutely sacrifice one for the other. Part of the way that we've been able to balance it is empower the team, have it so that our business is entirely dependent on us so that we can be able to work remotely. And that allows us to achieve like a really great but delicate balance, like be able to just enjoy summers, really maximize it. I mean, as you read earlier, all the barbecuing, the copious eating, being outside. I mean, it's really easy to do that from Cape Cod in the summer, mm-hmm. but the business is still chugging. So
we were actually okay with if our production numbers went back because what it meant for our family. And they didn't, luckily. You know, it's another thing that maybe we kind of like just took this big leap of faith and we're like, well, if we go back, it's okay. And it's grown, you know, with us being able to go away from the summers, you know. So I don't know. Maybe we're just lucky. I don't know if we know what we're doing.
Well, you know, Michael Hyatt, who's another strategic partner in our community, he shared this with me when it came to goal setting back in 2015. He said, set goals. He called them push goals or like domino goals. Set goals that if you do that, it like dominoes into other good things in your life. If you say, I'm going to work out at 5 a.m., you're probably not going to drink heavily the night before, right? And so by you guys setting that intention of we are going to take this summer and be with our boys, it forced you to build your team in a way that allowed that, which by the way, now is like the best thing ever because now you're able to help more people. It takes the weight off your shoulders. So I just think that that's a great hack in life. Is like set that intention that forces you to do the work to make it possible. And I love that. That's why Triad exists right there. Sean and I have been asked many times, like, oh, how did you come up with this vision for DBDL? We're like, number one, we listened to people like you that we respect and what you wanted. But number two, it was a selfish pursuit. We want the same thing you all want. We want to do business and do life and enjoy it and not let the business eat us alive and miss all the family dinners. And yesterday I was at my son's track meet at 3 p.m. and my team knew it because that's a higher priority for me than, you know, being on a call and missing the moments that matter. So I love that about you guys. Any other closing thoughts on just like your definition of do business, do life that you want to share before we wrap?
Just saying, you know, figure out what's truly important to you. Just set those goals. Don't worry about how you're going to achieve them. Just close your eyes. Like really feel like, what is your ideal Saturday? Like, where do you see yourself? Who are you surrounded by? What are you doing? Just write that down. And then honestly, everything else will just fall into place after it.
I don't know if I could say that any better. I mean, my message is to have a, and this is not an original thought. I'm probably stealing it from one of your other friends. Like it could be Chris Smith, but we try to embrace having a servant's mindset. You know, we're not in this business for money. I mean, if we wanted to stop growing and still be successful, we could do it. But I do believe we're really helping people. It's amazing to have a job where at the end of the day, people's lives are better off having, you know, interacted with you and you've touched their lives. And I feel just really lucky that that is something that we can do for a living, make money doing it, meet awesome friends and create awesome relationships along the way. Mm-hmm. And it's not just with clients. I mean, this community with Triad, you know, having other advisors that we're friendly with that are on the same journey. And like, I think all collectively we have that mindset. You know, to me, it's an amazing opportunity and position to be in life to say this is what we do for a living. So I hope other people can join us for the journey, Brad.
Well said. Well, Mike, Jess, as always, love our conversations. Thanks so much for just sharing openly. I know I 100% know this impacted a lot of advisors listening and watching in. So I'll let you get on to your day. You're very close to Saturday. So
yes.
I'll let you all get to the snow so you can actually get out and get on whatever adventure you're going to be up to. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Brad.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out this week's show. On to this week's featured review. It comes to us from Tim KTZ. He says 5 stars. Unmatched, this show is a must for students of the financial services industry. Every episode has been jam-packed with strategies to enhance my business and mindset shifts to improve my life. Brad's authenticity as a leader in this industry and an extremely intentional interviewer is unmatched. The guests and experts on the show have been nothing short of incredible. Thank you for all that you do. I am going to venture out. I'm going to guess this is Tim up in Chicago, another Triad member. Also, go check out, I believe it was episode 8 or 12. Basically, every fourth episode is a Triad member spotlight. And Tim is one of the Vantage Point guys, assuming this is him. I'm going to guess that's who it is just based on the name. But thanks for the kind words, Tim. And I have to say, it's been awesome getting to see you all evolve and grow your practice. And those that know Tim out there, absolute student, super coachable. And I've just seen the Vantage Point guys grow and evolve and better serve their clients in the short amount of time we've worked together. And I think one of the things in life that I've found is the most successful financial advisors, actually the most successful entrepreneurs and business people I know, they have this stance where they've never arrived. They're students of business, they're students of life. There's a constant curiosity and the ability to set ego aside so you can continue to grow and challenge your own thoughts. And that's definitely the Vantage Point guys. And just want to say thanks, Tim. I've learned a lot from you as well. And thanks for taking the time to leave a review. It means a lot. And looking forward to the journey together as we both grow and evolve in this business. So thanks everybody for listening in, and we will catch you on next week's episode. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Do Business, Do Life podcast. As we wrap, for access to show notes, transcripts, and exclusive content from all of our show's guests, don't forget to visit bradleyjohnson.com/podcast. And before you go, I've got a quick favor to ask. If you're liking the podcast, you can help support the show by leaving your rating and review on iTunes. Not only do we read every single comment, but this will help the show rank and get discovered by new listeners and other financial advisors out there that can benefit from the show. Trust me, it really does help. So thanks again for joining, and be sure to tune in next week for another episode. These conversations are intended to provide financial advisors with ideas, strategies, concepts, and tools that could be incorporated into their advisory practice. Advisors are ultimately responsible for ensuring implementation of anything discussed is in accordance with any and all regulatory and compliance responsibilities and obligations.